Free Talk Live, you dial toll-free. Join us right here. Our number, 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. We've got Skype. You can Skype on in here at username lrn.fm. With you in the studio tonight, it's me, Ian.
And me, Mark.
And Daryl.
So, of course, you can take control of the airwaves and bring up anything, but we've got also stuff that we bring in to discuss that we think you might enjoy, that you might find interesting or outrageous. And there's definitely some really good news in the world of, or at least promising news in the world of Bitcoin today. And I'm not just talking about the fact that the price is over 2,400 US dollars, and that's actually down a little bit from its earlier peak.
I'm talking like 2,475 or something.
I'm talking about this new agreement that has come out to solve the problems with Bitcoin. And we've been talking a lot about the ongoing, this kind of debate, this ongoing conflict within the Bitcoin community. And maybe we're going to see that resolved here with some of this news. Plus, the Vermont governor has vetoed a bill that would have legalized marijuana. So it was passed by the House and the Senate in Vermont. Which is pretty amazing, but he shut it down. We can get into that coming up here as well.
You know what this country doesn't have enough of? Pitchforks and torches.
Hmm. Were you suggesting that somebody go and threaten the governor? Or
it's pretty clear that the people want this.
Yeah,
right?
That's true.
And Vermont could have done really well financially by legalizing this, but their stinking governor decides to stand in the way. This is the founding fathers didn't have a problem with putting the putting a bullet center of mass through their onerous government at some point,
Politicians have been tarred and feathered previously, correct?
A good tarring and feathering might change this.
And some politicians in France back in, what was it, the 1700s?
They were lopping off heads.
Getting their heads lobbed off. But Donald Trump is the worst treated politician. No politician. Donald Trump recently said, no politician has been treated worse than I have. But tarring and feathering has happened, and heads being lopped off has happened.
Did they ever draw and quarter one?
Probably.
So it sounds like people are feeling passionate about this issue. Let's start here. Daryl, did you find a story from somewhere?
I did, from the Rolling Stone, which is actually the first story that I saw earlier today on this.
Now, this would have been the first legislatively legalized cannabis across the country, right? Because so far it's been done...
There were a couple of places to where things were placed on the ballot through a legislative process,
like
not necessarily through a petition. I don't remember if D.C. was the legislature or a petition, but I do know that either Colorado or Washington, one was the legislature put the amendment on the ballot instead of it being a citizen-driven initiative.
So this would have been the first time, though, if it had passed, that a legislature would have legalized through that full process of pass the House, pass the Senate, pass the governor, but it didn't pass the governor.
Right. And that bill, S-22, was vetoed by Vermont Governor Phil Scott. And that legislation, according to Rolling Stone, would have legalized cannabis in the state for adults over the age of 21. The supposedly libertarian-leaning governor, again, this from the
first
Rolling
time I've heard
Stone,
that.
Sent the law back to the legislature to develop clauses that further protect the health and safety of his constituents. The proposed bill, which would have been the first to legalize cannabis through the legislative process rather than ballot initiative, would have allowed adults to possess up to 1 ounce of cannabis, 2 mature plants, and 4 immature plants.
That doesn't include selling it, right?
Correct. There was not a tax and regulate scheme.
Really? I bet you that's why he rejected it.
It would have established a committee to study taxing and regulating.
Interesting. So they would have. So this legislation would have just gone ahead and made it legal to possess.
Sort of like what happened in D.C. And the reason it went that way in D.C. is because in D.C., citizen initiatives are not allowed to create new taxes or certain regulatory structures. So in D.C., up to, and I believe it's an ounce, then, you know, adults can possess, you can gift an amount to someone in the District of Criminals, but also you have to worry about all of these little enclaves and pockets of federally owned land throughout the district,
right,
where it's still illegal to possess, even though the city says it's okay. The federal government, you know, winds up trumping.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Getting back to the article from the Rolling Stone, they say, again, this would create a committee, or rather a commission, to look at taxing and regulating as have been done in other states and make recommendations for how Vermont could set up their own market. Though Scott said that he saw a clear societal shift on the issue, he reiterated his support for medical marijuana and said that he was not convinced the bill went far enough to protect Vermonters from intoxicated driving and local children from being exposed to the use of the drug.
Ridiculous.
He announced that he was sending the bill back with specific suggestions on how to amend it over the summer.
Well, specific suggestions are good. I mean, I guess this is certainly a step in the right direction, but I just presumed that we were talking about a sort of Colorado or Washington legalization situation where which I think is good because it
which
leaves,
is what's going to happen
well,
in
it leaves the opportunity open for a New England state to profit mightily.
Massachusetts and Maine are right about to do that,
to open up for sales.
Yeah, I mean, in about a
it's
year,
it's going to be summer of next year,
but it's on the way. Like that's
yes.
coming.
It's
They're
in
working
the works.
That out now.
It is in the works. Now, one
you're going to be able to drive down to Massachusetts or, you know, over to Maine if you live in New Hampshire or Vermont.
Don't bring your gun.
Walk into right. Don't bring a gun. Generally, they don't like it
well,
when you mix drugs
with guns.
Well,
don't take it to Massachusetts.
Guns. Right. Yeah. Bad idea.
You don't bring a gun into Massachusetts at all.
Yeah.
I've heard of people getting arrested there for bullets.
You'll go to prison for a bullet in that state. Yes. But you'll be able to walk down there, you know, go into a store and walk out with cannabis in whatever amounts they allow. And I'm not sure what those will be. But
Maine allows twice as much as Massachusetts is going to allow.
Well, then they're
going to
get even more business then from even from people in Boston might even drive up to Maine for that one. Take a day and just, you know, go to some weed shops. And
it's
then,
not
hold
far
on,
at all.
Hold on. Why would you drive from Boston to Maine to purchase an amount of cannabis that you are not allowed to legally possess in the state of Massachusetts? That makes
or
no
New
sense.
Hampshire.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah,
drive
point.
Through New Hampshire.
Good point. Well, anyway.
The Maniacs will probably deliver.
Well, there's already delivery service in Portland.
We discussed that a few weeks ago.
A couple weeks back. So some entrepreneurs have decided that they are not going to wait for the regulations. They're just going to start selling. But they're not selling the weed, Mark. They are...
They're giving
you the weed, and they're taking a delivery fee.
Yes,
I see.
So
now, they could sell hot dogs.
Well,
good. Do that.
One thing
like
that's really interesting, and I don't know if this is, you know, the Rolling Stone sort of making things up in their reporting,
gathering moss.
They do that, or they don't do that.
They don't do that.
Actually, I think MythBusters busted that. Rolling Stone gathers no moss is the claim.
Oh, I've never heard that one.
That's because your stone sits still a whole lot. Your stone sits still off until 11 a.m.
He's stoned and then sits still a lot. But the article here suggests that the committee, or rather the House and the Senate in Vermont, can amend this before voting to override the veto. And that just does not sound accurate to me at all. So it might be sloppy reporting.
But they could override the veto.
They could override the veto.
Oh, that's an interesting thing.
That's always an option.
Right.
Whether or not there's the votes to do it is a completely different question.
Usually a large majority or two-thirds.
Most states it's two-thirds. There are some states where it's simple majority. Mm-hmm. And I've not looked at the laws in Vermont on overriding vetoes.
If it's New England, it's probably not a simple majority. It's probably
correct.
Two-thirds or something.
But you know, just the claim here by the reporter that
I'm pretty sure Vermont's
amend
in New England.
This.
That's what I'm saying.
You said if it's New England.
Yeah, if it's New England, they're probably not going to be a majority. It's probably going to be like the other New England states and require two-thirds. 855-450-FREE. We can talk more about this. Governor, I want to hear if we can see if we can get like a quote from him, if possible, about this. This is Free Talk Live.
There are questions.
It's Free Talk Live. You are invited to join us right here via the toll-free number. That number is 855-450-FREE, like freedom, 855-450-3733. We do have Skype, and you can Skype into the show here at username lrn.fm.
Libertarian. We were discussing
libertarianism on the mind.
Yeah, libertarianism on the mind. If you're looking for a libertarian healthcare company, a free market healthcare company, then look no further than HealthExcellenceSelect.com. Now, they are not a health insurance company. What they do is they help you to, A, not need health insurance, and, B, share the costs with others. So no extra cost consultations with doctors, potentially 24 hours a day. You can get a proactive health assessment daily. You can get a medical information card that you can give to EMS workers or first emergency responders or emergency room personnel or whomever. And it's very difficult to coordinate with HIPAA laws who gets your medical information and who doesn't. Well, this solves that problem, too. It's HealthExcellenceSelect.com. You can check them out right now. Any kind of doctor, traditional, integrative, chiropractic, acupuncture, massage, you'll love the service and the price. HealthExcellenceSelect.com.
All right, so we're going to come back to more about Governor Rick, was it Scott? What's his name? Phil Scott.
Rick Scott is
the Texas guy?
Dude, no, completely wrong state.
Rick Scott
was former governor of Florida.
Florida. I used to live down there.
Who's the governor now of Florida?
He might still be. I just know at one time he was governor there.
I think he was after we left that guy.
Yes.
So anyway, this
he
Phil
was the
Scott.
One who took the place of what was the one with the really fake tan?
Charlie Crist.
Yeah, Charlie Crist. That we
Rick
got kicked
Scott-
off.
Rick Scott is still the governor of Florida.
How about that? Charlie Crist turned down my pardon.
Your pardon.
And then, of course, we've been on Tallahassee radio stations.
On and off, yeah.
On and off for a very long time. I just pounded and pounded and pounded.
Maybe should've, he heard you.
Should have given me the pardon.
Phil Scott, governor of Vermont, has rejected at this time marijuana legalization bill. We'll tell you more about that. We get
and
some
it
quotes.
Does require two-third majority to override.
I don't know offhand what the legislature passed it with previously, but in New Hampshire, the decrim bill at least did pass with more than two-thirds in both the Senate and the House, which was the first time the Senate actually voted for that was this year. So New Hampshire is on track to get decriminalization of cannabis this year, and thank goodness it's been a long time coming, but we'll see what Matt Simon has to say. He's one of the prime activists in marijuana decrim here in
Vermont. Plus, I did find a quote from Governor Scott.
Good. We'll get into that. Plus, I got a piece from Burlington Free Press, which gets into it as well with some Scott quotes. But let's go to your calls and thoughts. Dave is in New Hampshire. He is probably Dave Ridley. Dave, you're on Free Talk Live.
I think I am.
You're the only Dave who calls us from New Hampshire.
There's more liberty activity to report in the free state. It isn't quite free
not
yet.
Not yet.
That's why it's a project.
There will be
rhetorically free state.
Yeah.
A free-ish state.
There will be a libertarian conference on the 28th. It strikes me as a little bit similar to the one that we had in, I guess there was one in 2011 with the 10th Amendment Center came up and held a conference. It's about like that. It'll be just going on for one day.
I'm actually one of the speakers. It's the Libertarian State Leadership Alliance is putting on a conference.
Now, who is that?
The Libertarian State Leadership Alliance.
I understand.
That is the entity.
It's a group that promotes being a good leader, helping people learn leadership skills. I mean, I've never...
I'm not a
them.
Member of the organization.
I see.
I'm just speaking
just
at their
you to
event.
Speak. Okay.
But I believe most of the people that are involved are people that are in leadership positions of the various state LP affiliates.
Now, is there going to be a heavy recruitment pitch here to get them to move to New Hampshire? Because, what we want is the libertarian doers to get out of wherever they are.
I'm fairly certain that me and Roger Paxton, who's the vice chair of the LPNH,
moved here from Arkansas. You moved from Texas.
Yeah. We're on the same panel, and I'm fairly certain that we will be advocating for, hey, while you're here, just stay because things are better here than a lot of places.
While you're here, find a realtor.
Dave, what did you want to talk about with regard to that conference?
Oh, not much in particular, just the fact that it's happening. I didn't see anything there that was particularly jaw-dropping. I'm not real into conferences, but as with anything else, 90% of success is just showing up in the right place, right? So it's at least they picked New Hampshire for it. I think that's great.
Yeah,
I'm always glad
me
to
too.
See any liberty activity here.
Fantastic. So, Dave Ridley, RidleyReport.com. What's fresh on the Ridley Report channel right now?
I just finished a series of uploads about this incident over at the Goffstown prison.
What is the incident at Goffstown prison?
You didn't see any of these.
I'm way behind on my video subscriptions. I'm behind on my emails, too.
The prison called the cops on me for standing outside the jail grounds, the prison grounds, with a sign, and the police arrived with the sirens.
Oh, wow. All right. And you didn't get arrested.
Correct. But I did get a no trespass order. Like, I never was on the prison grounds, but they issued me a piece of paper that says I can't go on the prison grounds anyway.
Walk no further.
Wow, that's crazy. For how long are you banned from the jail?
Lifetime.
Are you serious?
I'm banned from prison for life. I'm guaranteed my freedom.
Wow.
Sounds like you better stay in Goffstown.
Wow. So is there any exception in case you, I don't know, want to go there for business? Maybe you want to visit somebody, for instance?
Presumably I would have to ask and get some kind of a waiver or something like that, which of course is one of those ways they just keep you from bothering in the first place.
And all you were doing was standing outside, with a sign? What were you doing out there?
It's just my let my people go sign. I've carried it outside the
there's a lot of people in that prison aren't your people.
The women's prison, you mean?
As far as I'm concerned, they pretty much are. I mean, if you think about it, usually about 60% of the people in any jail or prison are folks who are there for a drug crime.
Yeah,
or
of course we've done
a violation of probation or.
Yeah, we've seen a crackdown around the jails and the prisons here in New Hampshire over the last decade. I mean, I remember back when a bunch of people would go out to the old Keene jail, which actually wasn't in Keene, it was in a nearby town. You'd have to drive like 20 plus minutes to actually get to this place. And then we would actually set up like a barbecue grill and chairs, and people would so if somebody was going to jail, we'd all go out there with that person and sort of throw them a goodbye party. Basically just have like a cookout right across the street from the jail.
It was one for me.
Yeah, it was technically in the jail parking lot, and then frequently would also have another cookout when people would get out of jail, because there was a lot of civil disobedience happening here at that time, and it was so much fun. I mean, we would just hang out, we'd eat food, we'd smoke pot right across from the jail, and it was just a fantastic time. Then they moved the jail here into the Keene city limits. And then all of a sudden this crackdown began where
you people couldn't hang out at the jail anymore.
We tried to go out to the jail again, and we like walked around the new jail just like we used to always walk around the old jail with
a
bunch of signs.
You mean like with a giant cardboard sword?
Yeah, I think Jim Johnson had one of those. and so then they came out and they threatened us and ultimately arrested a dozen of us. It was called the Trespass of 12. And so it sounds like you're dealing with some of the same crap there, Dave, except even worse, they're banning you without even having set foot on the place. We're coming up. It's Free Talk Live. Thanks, Dave.
Do you want to help build a better financial system for everyone? Join Dash. Dash is digital cash, a digital money platform designed to replace cash and help people manage their own wealth. It's fast and easy. Fees are low and transactions are confirmed instantly. Dash is decentralized, run by users who earn rewards for helping run the network and make governance decisions. Help people take control over their financial future today. Find out more at dash.org.
It's Free Talk Live. You can bring up whatever you want. Just dial in toll-free and join us here, 855-450-FREE, like freedom. That's 855-450-3733. You want to save big time on your purchases at Amazon? Save It Purse lets you do that. You go to saveitpurse.com, and that is the key to this, though. You have to spend cryptocurrency like Bitcoin. If you got dollars, sorry, you can't use saveitpurse.com. You can go look at it. You can sign up for an account. But you can't actually use the site for its intended purpose, which is to save you big time on your purchases at Amazon.
But you could use it to get your hands on some Bitcoin.
That's true. You could do that if you want to pay a huge premium for your Bitcoin, because the way it works over at saveitpurse.com is when you want to buy something on Amazon, you have to spend your Bitcoin, which means someone else is buying that Bitcoin. And the way they do that is by buying the thing for you at Amazon. And then once you get that thing, you then release the Bitcoin of yours from the escrow on the site, and the person who bought the thing for you gets the Bitcoin. But that means if you wanted a 20% discount on your Amazon purchase, that means that person just paid 20% on top of the price of Bitcoin to buy that Bitcoin.
Right.
So it's the worst place to buy Bitcoin.
Well, there are people that wind up, you know, through various means, wind up having a lot of Amazon credit.
Correct.
And yep, they might not necessarily need to buy things from Amazon, but they
right,
need
something else.
You know, like some kind of currency, and they will use the purse to convert their Amazon credit to Bitcoin that they can then convert to a local currency.
What? How long does it take generally from the time that a person picks up your order till the package is delivered and you have to release Bitcoin?
Regular shipping? I've had things arrive the next day.
I've had things arrive Sunday. Because they'll pay extra for Sunday delivery if they really are in a hurry sometimes.
Right. And, you know, a lot of time if the thing is Prime eligible and the person has yeah, Prime, then you might get that Sunday delivery for free.
Yep. Four days ago, Bitcoin was worth something like 20% less than it is now. Mm-hmm. You'd have to save more than 20% to make the purchase make sense.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
With the only way things are shooting up,
the price shoots up, but when it stays steady like it did for so long, you know, saving 5% and having it fulfilled immediately makes sense.
Yeah, it does. You know, so use this service anytime but now.
Well, I wouldn't say that. I mean, it just, you never know what the price is going to do, Mark. You don't know if it's going to go down tomorrow or whatever. But regardless, I use it anyway just because it's, I like the idea of saving money, and I can't predict the future about Bitcoin, so I'm
right,
I'm not going to hold off on the potential for saving 20% just because Bitcoin's price might go up.
Right, and I buy things that I need anyway.
Yeah, so why not
using
save?
Purse?
Yeah, and if you're going to rebuy the Bitcoin as I do, like if I spend Bitcoin, I buy that Bitcoin because I don't want to spend my Bitcoin.
Right, you want to have a certain
amount. I want
to
hold on to the Bitcoin. Yeah. So anytime I buy Bitcoin, I have an order in at a website called I have an order in at a website called Reload, which actually monitors my wallet address. And anytime there is Bitcoin that leaves that wallet, it will go ahead and place an order for that on one of the Bitcoin exchanges.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah. So I don't lose Bitcoin.
Right. So then you buy at the same rate that you sold, right?
Correct.
Or, you know, maybe there's probably
a percentage difference or whatever. Yeah.
Not much of a premium. Yeah.
So anyway, it makes a difference when you go to saveitpurse.com. Saveatpurse.com. Let's go to your phone calls and thoughts. More about Vermont not quite legalizing cannabis because the governor has vetoed it. And Daryl, you've got some of the numbers on that. We're going to get into
yes,
it coming up
and
here in a
quotes,
moment. But let's go to Patrick. He's in Bullhead City, Arizona, listening to K-Talks.
Hey, guys. It's nice to hear you again.
Hey, Patrick.
Hey, I have an answer to your question. You actually asked a very cool question. Part of the reason why they don't let people hang out in front of prisons anymore was, I mean, it was people that ruined it for everybody, actually, because there used to be, when I first started, there'd be people that would just literally come and do what you say, barbecue and everything, and it was... If they were off the property, it wasn't our concern, really. But people started filming officers leaving and coming to the prison, also transport vehicles coming. And then...
Shouldn't that be there, right?
Well, I guess, but there were some people that got hurt. And actually, some officers that out here in Arizona... Arizona, I know that got targeted, and they ended up following them or getting their number, home addresses and everything, mm-hmm, and a couple people got killed, and so they've really sort of cracked down on that for the safety of officers. Now you're right, it is, you're right to hang out there, but Also, to buses coming in and out, you know, moving in inmates back and forth, it created they were getting, you know, movement times and stuff. So they got a little spooked on
that. That's the weakness. That's the weakness of the criminal justice system. I mean, you know, it's when inmates are being transported is the time that you would be most likely to sort of get somebody free. I would specifically say when they're doing sort of a hospital transport or something, when it's a single inmate and they're probably not using the most secure vehicle, you know, that sort of thing. Oftentimes they only have one officer doing the transport. But, yeah, I mean, I can totally see why prisons and jails would have a real problem with that sort of thing.
Well, yeah, recently we've had, I could speak freely about this. We had an episode where one of the prisons had a situation happen out there which got national attention. And the problem we were having was keeping things in check. And, I mean, we had helicopters flying over, and it was really a nightmare because things were getting really blown out of proportion because, you know, like you say, if you see something on video, sometimes it isn't what it actually is. You know what I'm saying? You know, you guys probably run into that all the time. And it caused some serious problems for just officers that worked out there that literally had nothing to do with the incident. And it was creating a threatening situation.
Now, what was the incident? I'm sorry, I missed that detail.
It was an escape that happened, and the sad part was it literally ruined the reputation of a lot of people that were good officers. That, I mean, you'd meet them on the street, you wouldn't know they were corrections officers, guys. They were
most of the time you wouldn't.
So
what you're saying is an inmate escaped. That meant that the corrections officers who were in charge of that inmate at that moment looked bad?
Very bad. It's the one thing that is unforgivable when it comes to a corrections officer.
But the thing is they painted it up so much that instead of focusing in on really, I think, going after the person who escaped, I think they just wasted time on sensationalizing, trying to point the blame instead of...
When you say they, are you referring to the media?
Media, public opinion, you know, it varied.
But the media is not going to find convicts, nor is the public. The people that find convicts are correctional officers with bloodhounds.
Well, I mean, yeah, but they sometimes will get tips from people. I mean, for instance, you know, you look at what happened with, I mean, not just convicts.
I agree.
You look at what happened with the Boston bombers. They found those guys.
The Facebook killer guy got caught by a McDonald's worker.
Yep, that's right. Hey, thanks, Patrick.
Like, hey, wait a second. This is the guy. And so they held up his fries.
That's right.
And he was like, I need my nuggets. And he just took the bag of nuggets
before the fries.
And then left. But because the cops had already been notified, they were able to, you know, catch him a couple miles away from the McDonald's.
Right, or the D.C. snipers, which, again, was another break by the people, not by the police.
And now that McDonald's doesn't use fat to fry their fries, they're not worth waiting for anyway.
And the media was giving a completely wrong report of the vehicle in that D.C. sniper thing.
Toll-free number tonight, 855-450-FREE. Mark, when did McDonald's change their fry solution?
Oh, it's been, I was in high school. I used to use lard.
More coming up. Free Talk Live. This is Free Talk Live. You may dial in toll free. Join us right here. We got more about the Vermont close call. They almost had legalized cannabis, but the governor has vetoed it. And we'll see what he has to say for himself about this coming up here in a moment. With you tonight, it's Ian
and Mark
and Daryl.
Don't forget, if you support Free Talk Live, one of the best ways you can do that financially is by becoming a Free Talk Live amplifier over at amp.freetalklive.com, ampamp.freetalklive.com, and that allows you to get signed up for $5 per month where you can get behind the show as far as helping us get on new radio stations, expanding our reach with the ideas of liberty and peace. If that's worth the price of a fancy cup of coffee to you, then please go to amp.freetalklive.com and get signed up there. You can use any major credit card, PayPal, as well as you can utilize Bitcoin. So go to amp.freetalklive.com and learn about the perks you'll receive as a Free Talk Live amplifier, which include your ability to access the AMP-only Facebook group. There's also AMP-only phone lines and an AMP-only podcast and more coming soon. So learn more over at amp.freetalklive.com. Let's go to your calls. More of them. We got Tom in Nashua, New Hampshire. You're on Free Talk Live. Hello, Tom.
It was 38 years ago today, Governor Hugh Gallon of New Hampshire signed a bill raising the New Hampshire drinking age effective immediately from 18 to 20. And, you know, I had sent him a letter telling him not to do so, but he just went ahead and did it anyway.
Well, we got to keep those teenagers safe, because now no teenager under the age of 21 will drink alcohol.
Well,
or 20-something.
Because
that never happens.
The whole political issue just is so misguided, because it's all about now, well, wait a second, if they lower the drinking age, would they do more binge drinking? You know, which is like saying, well, gee, under freedom of religion, what if more people start converting to Islam? Well, they have a right to convert to Islam. You know, and if they go out drinking, well, they have a right to do binge drinking and drink themselves half blind and everything else.
I think the evidence is that people are more likely to binge drink when alcohol is
prohibited.
Yeah.
Correct. Because, you know, but they find somebody willing to buy them alcohol, they hand them money and say, get me as much as possible.
Or they go to the, and then if they want to go to the sports
all
event.
Of it.
Yeah, they want to go to the sports event, but they can't bring the alcohol in.
Inside,
so they drink it,
right.
They drink it ahead of time, and, you know, they go in and stagger in.
Yep.
Well, the thing is, though, that's beside the point, because they're not violating anyone's rights by drinking. So, you know, it's a whole absurd thing about, well, gee, what if they do more drinking and you know,
who
and
cares?
Right, but we're pointing out,
them,
Tom,
should we let them?
Tom, we're pointing out that the evidence is to the contrary, that they won't do quote unquote more drinking because they don't need to drink all of the beer all at once, because how right. dare I can't possibly get busted here.
He's talking, I think there's miscommunication. He's talking about what they are saying, those who oppose lower drinking ages, right, Tom?
Yeah, but see, it's beside the point whether they do more or less drinking. Kind of like it's beside the point what religion other people would use in a free country with freedom of religion. It's their right to do that.
Well, the do-gooders want to protect the young people, right? They don't care as much if somebody in their 50s is drinking until they're half blind, but they care about the teenagers. They want to give them a chance at a good life, and they know that, you know, alcoholism is damaging. It's a problem. It's going to result in a terrible life, and they don't want them
and
to start.
And if the younger you start, the more likely you are to be an alcoholic.
Right. So they have their rationale for why they pass these laws. They, you know, they're do-gooders. They want to use the government, the force of the state, to try to mold society and individuals in the way they want them to.
Hard
be.
Hard liquor is absolutely horrible. That's why the state has to control the distribution
it.
Of it.
Yeah. Well, that's how it is here.
By the way,
there are a lot of other places where it's what they call a control state,
yeah.
to where there might be private distribution, but those private distributors still have to purchase through the state.
Through the state, yeah. So, Tom, what's your point of this? You just commemorating the or memorializing the death of freedom in this area?
I'm mentioning how misguided the whole conversation is, because they're not talking about, does the government have a right to hire gun-toting goons in bulletproof vests to intimidate Mr. and Mrs. 20 into abstaining from the beverage of their choice? They're only debating on, like, what happens this, what happens that, instead of whether they have any right to do so. And so we've got to avoid debating them on the statistics, because the statistics are irrelevant. And as far as crime statistics, like drunk driving, since liberty inheres in the individual, the only statistics that are relevant are statistics about that one individual and not about other individuals who may have been the same age. And all. So they keep misguiding. And if they eliminate drunk driving, then there would be no teenagers killed in drunk driving crashes, for example. But
Tom,
they don't want
thank
to
you for the call tonight.
Driving.
I appreciate hearing from you. The toll-free number is 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. And, of course, you know, really the most important thing to point out here is that despite the drinking ages, alcohol consumption amongst teenagers and 20-year-olds is tremendous. I mean, all of us grew up in a lot of us grew up in time where it was illegal. And certainly even if you were drinking before 18, when it was 18 was the legal age, there were surely 16 and 17-year-olds and such that were drinking at that time. So most people, you know, probably broke the law when it came to their teenage years at some point and drank without permission from the state. That's, I mean, in my experience, I don't know people who didn't do that.
I think that you're right, but I don't hold that up as a good thing. So choosing to drink alcohol when it's illegal like it is here in the United States.
It's good for people to ignore bad laws.
Generally results in people, you know, drinking in very irresponsible fashions. And those people are more likely to end up alcoholic in the future. People who are the less likely are people who are either A, choose to abstain from alcohol when they're young for whatever reason, and they do that whether they were whether it was legal or not, or B, people who are taught how to consume alcohol by their parents at home, sort of at mealtime and that sort of thing, as opposed to, you know, young people just learning from pimply-faced 16-year-olds how to consume alcohol. And then maybe let's learn about sex and marijuana and heroin
all at the same time.
Right, but if you're drinking a glass of wine in most of the country at home with your family and you are under the age of 21, that is still illegal and your parents are committing, you know, some kind of crime.
At least the crime of contributing to the delinquency of a minor.
And there's also the providing alcohol to a minor. Right. There are a large number of things
right.
they could hit
You'll
you with.
You'll let a 16-year-old, a 15-year-old drive an automobile, which is a, you know, 3,000-pound killing machine. And frankly, they can drive a pickup truck, which doubles that weight. You'll let them, a 17-year-old, sign up for the military, but you won't let anybody until 21 consume alcohol. I mean, like, I as a parent can't choose when legally when my son chooses to consume alcohol. My son has no interest in consuming
alcohol. Not yet. He's only nine.
Not today.
So this is, you know, it.
So,
like,
hold
I get
on. Okay. When's the first time you ever got drunk?
Drunk 16.
Drank alcohol or got drunk?
Got drunk.
15. Late 15th, like my 16th birthday was like 2 days before my 15th, 16th.
I think I was six.
Wow.
And let me explain,
God.
Because it sounds absolutely horrible.
Alabama.
I was sick. I had, you know, like a horrible cough. And my stepmom was like, well, I know that, you know, there's this home mixture sort of thing of a little bit of whiskey, honey, and peppermint, and it's supposed to help you. And yeah, I just got.
That's not drunk. That's medicine, buddy.
No, I was plastered.
She gave you more than a little bit of whiskey?
Yes.
So she was supposed to give you some, but then she just let you keep drinking it, or
no?
What?
She measured out the wrong amount.
Oh,
yeah,
I see.
It was like a shot glass full.
Wow. All right. And you
with
were six.
A little bit of honey
and
peppermint. Right. Yeah.
So
I bet it didn't bother. I bet your cold didn't bother you.
Yeah, I don't remember.
I think you made a good point, Mark, that having teenagers, young people drinking alcohol in an irresponsible manner is what prohibition gets us, and that there are some bad aspects to that. On the good side of it, it is good that people see the laws are as dumb and are willing to ignore them. So
well,
I think that there's
I think
some
that people
there.
See the laws as dumb and choose to ignore them. I'm not going to come down on the side of it's a really great idea for young people, you know, without the guidance of an experienced adult to use one of the deadliest
I didn't say it was a great
drugs
idea.
On the well, I you said it was good. Idea. It is not good. It is bad.
I think it's good that people break bad laws. The toll free number here is tonight. If
there
they do
are so many better laws to break than this one.
If they do it responsibly. And I think that it's important to drink responsibly. And you're right. The fact that it's prohibited makes it hard to learn that.
North to Port is a Liberty-inspired fiction podcast about a band on tour. Each episode chronicles the band's adventures in the form of a radio interview at a tour stop location. Listen as North to Port explores Liberty themes in friendly ways, with humor and music. To listen to the podcast and the accompanying album, please visit northtoport.com. That's NORTHTOPORT.com. Or just search North to Port in your favorite podcatcher.
This is Free Talk Live. You can bring up whatever you want. Just dial on in toll-free here at 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. We do have Skype. The Skype username is lrn.fm. In the studio tonight with you, it's Ian.
Oh, and Mark. I just banged on right there on the studio table.
He hit the knee version of a funny bone.
Yeah, this table is very, very unforgiving when it comes to hitting it with body parts. And you're Daryl.
I am Daryl.
All right, good. So our toll-free number is 855-450-FREE, like freedom. You can join us here and bring up whatever's on your mind. We need to talk about the Bitcoin situation. There's been big news, and it's not just the fact that the price has been at record highs over the last few days. But there's other big news that could actually help the price out some more,
yes,
as a matter of fact. We'll get into that coming up here in moments, but we never really finished up, because we got a bunch of calls in the first hour.
Yes.
We never really did finish up the story about Governor Phil Scott. He's the governor of Vermont, and he was, I guess, the first time governor, first year that he's been in there.
Got elected last year.
He's a Republican. The
yes.
Rolling Stone article that you were citing earlier claimed that he was libertarian-leaning.
Yeah, and I still don't know what that means, because even if you think that the word libertarian just means smaller government, then how could you say someone who is advocating for a tax and regulate scheme is supporting small government?
Exactly.
Well, I mean, as I said, it's libertarian leaning, which to these people, I mean, yeah, that's what it means. It means small government, and here's the reason. When it comes to
taxes, and regulate is small government. How?
That's an increase in the size of government.
Because libertarians tend to have a preference as to what types of taxes are better than others. Would you not agree?
No, libertarians think all taxes are immoral.
No, they don't. Because you have
Well, then you're not talking to a real libertarian.
The real libertarian fallacy. All right. So let's define our terms, because I think it's important.
A libertarian is someone who adheres to the non-aggression principle, which says that you don't support or advocate the initiation of force to achieve political or social goals. That's what a libertarian is.
Yes.
Somebody who wants less government, that's good and all. I mean, I'm glad for them.
That would be a minarchist.
But that's not a real libertarian.
No. The Libertarian Party welcomes minarchists. So hold on.
Sure, but they're not supposed to be their candidates.
I didn't get to make the point.
Yeah.
I think that it's fair to say that there is a libertarian position, which is always pro-freedom, but the one needn't be have a libertarian position on every issue every time in order to be a libertarian.
By my book, you should be.
I understand, but you don't get to decide what words mean.
Sure,
no,
I do.
You don't. You don't.
Yep, just
you,
like you,
you
do.
So, hold on.
No, you've decided differently from me.
This is the broad brush that people use, and I'll go ahead and admit there are a lot of libertarians that use an equally broad brush on, you know, the pro-government side, to where they're like, anybody that disagrees with me on one issue is, you know, socialist or this or that or the other thing. And then there's the big government people that use an equally broad brush of, well, anybody that I think want something to be smaller just a little bit must be a libertarian.
Mm-hmm. So a libertarian believes that according to your definition, believes that every issue can be solved by the free market, right?
Yeah, I would say that's
okay.
Generally
so
true.
Does a voluntarist
believe, as long as it's voluntary? Yeah.
So does a voluntarist believe the same thing?
Yeah, absolutely.
Does an anarcho-capitalist believe the same thing?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
You don't
exactly
know?
What.
Like, you've been doing this radio show for...
Yeah, I don't know what exactly an anarcho-capitalist would describe themselves
Murray
as.
Murray Rothbard, one of the guys that helped found the Libertarian Party, coined the term to mean precisely a hardcore libertarian that believes that every time. See, the reason I use the term
libertarian... Well, capitalists believe in capitalism. That's not necessarily the free market, right?
Okay, look, you don't get to... you didn't create the term, right? So there's the etymology,
no, I'm asking you
and
what
here's the origin.
Yeah.
an anarcho-capitalist is basically defined as the same thing as a voluntarist and defined as the same thing as you define a libertarian
as. But that's not the same thing, because an anarcho-capitalist is a capitalist. That means they have specifically endorsed one type of economic organization as the best one.
Capitalism.
Whereas someone who is a voluntarist just says that all human interactions should be consensual. That's a big difference.
Right. So voluntary communism would be allowed in
under voluntarism.
As it would in anarcho-capitalism. Anarcho-capitalism.
Try telling a communist that.
I understand. Oh, I get that you want to make a term that's inclusive, and I concur with you that voluntarist is a better term than anarcho-capitalist. What, however, you and I are disagreeing on is that you want no words to mean small government, smaller than Republican government, more principled
when
than
I say that. Daryl already pointed out that's a minarchist.
That term is in no way used by the people that call the, have that philosophy.
A supporter of small government.
I know people that call themselves minarchist, Mark.
A supporter of small government. How about that?
Is
there a better word? I don't know.
Probably more regularly call themselves libertarians, and a vast swath of the population who believes similarly calls themselves libertarian. We need a term to describe people that are libertarian, but not all the way libertarian like you are. To exclude them, now I understand why you can say that there is a libertarian position, and I concur with you. There is a libertarian position.
And a libertarian should hold that position.
They should, but they don't necessarily.
That's
their problem.
Mark, let me ask you this
question. Then why
would
the Nolan chart have a large area that includes an amount of statism in it?
That's a good point, because people are allowed to grow in their beliefs.
Oh, can they start off as a libertarian and grow to be more libertarian?
Yeah, absolutely.
Great! So then they're a libertarian, and you lose this battle.
Let me ask you this question, and then I want to get into the quote from Governor Scott. You said that people that hold some libertarian positions, there needs to be a term for them. How many positions should one hold that are libertarian positions before they get to use the term libertarian leaning?
Somewhere between 75% and 80%.
Okay.
And I would say that you would need you would need to be, you should be libertarian on the big ones. And I'll admit,
like
the
weed,
ones that I define as big, right?
Like weed, like cannabis.
Cannabis isn't that important to me. I would say taxation. You
the
need
war
to be,
on drugs to libertarians is a pretty big issue.
You want
right,
to see
but the
government.
War on drugs is much more than just weed.
True.
That you want to see, I would say that you should hold that position on cannabis.
Well, this guy doesn't, this Governor Phil Scott.
And he's only described by the Rolling Stone, which is not a libertarian magazine, as libertarian leaning. Mm-hmm. Okay, so maybe, he's for cutting the size of government greatly.
Right, so maybe they think that Gary Johnson's a libertarian, and so they think
Gary Johnson is a libertarian.
No, he's not.
He was the
big
Libertarian
L.
Party.
He's a big L libertarian.
Meaning he's a member of the Libertarian
Correct.
Party.
Let's get
he was,
back
a matter of fact,
to
their presidential candidate. So he is the libertarian right about now.
Afraid not.
Let's get back into the article. The Rolling Stone has a quote from Matt Simon, who's the New England political director for the Marijuana Policy Project.
He's a Free State Project early mover, Matt Simon.
And I believe he's actually living in Vermont now.
I thought he moved back.
I don't know if he did.
I know he did move there, but I could have sworn he'd moved back and he's in Manchester again. But I could be wrong. He doesn't talk to me.
But in either case,
perhaps you're too libertarian.
He's still the political director, New England political director for MPP. He says, despite the veto, this is a huge leap forward. The passage of S-22 demonstrates most members of both legislative chambers are ready to move forward with making marijuana legal for adults. Lawmakers now have an opportunity to address the governor's concerns, and apparently, according to Simon, they can pass a revised bill over the summer, and he says, we're excited about its prospects. Now, let's go to some quotes from Governor Scott. WCAX has the story. First, they sort of paraphrase. He said that the bill does not have stiff enough penalties for selling to minors. He wants lawmakers to rewrite those sections. Secondly, the governor says the bill needs more aggressive penalties for using marijuana while driving or around children. And third,
using
he said,
marijuana around children.
That's ridiculous. Yes. I mean, it's based on this prohibitionist mindset that marijuana is this dangerous drug, and if children see someone using it, it's going to turn them into a dope addict.
And
what's the penalty for using alcohol around
in front
children?
Of children?
Yeah.
Good question. How about smoking a cigarette? Because how the hell do you tell the difference?
There might be a penalty for smoking in front of children. I know
in
there
Vermont?
Are in New York.
855, 450 free.
Third, he says the regulatory commission will need more time to study the issues about potential mental health and drug use prevention. And there's more.
All right, 855-450-3733. You may take control of the airwave, share your thoughts on cannabis legalization or whatever's on your mind. Free Talk Live. It's Free Talk Live. Dial toll-free. Join us right here. Our number, 855-450-FREE, like freedom. That's 855-450-3733. Skype on in here at Skype username lrn.fm. So you can, of course, bring up anything that you want to discuss, and that is kind of the point here on Free Talk Live.
Whole food multi-complete. Have you ever noticed how you feel sluggish and tired after a big meal? That's because your body's enzymes are prioritizing the digestion of food. This is why many people take a digestive enzyme supplement. A quality enzyme supplement that contains a full array of enzymes will help digest all three macronutrients. That's proteins, fats, and carbs. This means more energy for you and an improved weight management over time. Some nutritional experts even feel a digestive enzyme supplement is more important than a vitamin and mineral supplement. But with Whole Food Multicomplete, you don't have to decide between the two. Whole Food Multicomplete includes both vitamins and minerals and digestive enzymes in a single product. Not only that, they include five other classes of nutrients, with a total of 54 nutrients. That's classes versus how many nutrients there are. For 15 years, Whole Food Multicomplete has combined digestive enzymes, minerals, vitamins, probiotics, antioxidants, herbal immune support, and more all into a single product. They are the only one that does a 7-in-1 product, so they're making thousands of people healthier while saving them thousands of dollars. You can be one of them, like I am. I lost some weight on it, too. They mentioned the weight management. 30% off with coupon code FTL. That'll get you basically cost. It'll get your first order at cost if you use coupon code FTL. And if you order $60 or more, it's free shipping. Head on over right now and just go ahead and do it, because what you're using isn't as good, and it certainly isn't as low cost. SimplifyMySupplements.com. Well, if it is as good, it is not as low cost.
Right, and I even, just for comparison's sake, compared the ingredients in the Whole Food Multi-Complete with all of the vitamins that I have in my little vitamin bag, and it doesn't even compare.
Blows them out of the water, huh?
Yeah, and I've got a multivitamin, vitamin C, vitamin D, a bunch of stuff, and just the number of things and the amount in the Whole Food Multi-Complete just does, what I had in my vitamin bag does not compare.
SimplifyMySupplements.com. Let's go to Ben. He's in Canada on the Amp Lines. Hello, Ben.
Hi. I have to side with Mark on the whole libertarian minarchist voluntarist term issue, because I think dealing with so many people that don't really like political labeling in general, they more focus on what ideas are presented to them and not just the names or the labels. And I think talking about those kind of things are a bit frivolous, and saying, oh, this person is not a true libertarian.
Let's bring people into the movement by playing semantic games and yelling at each other about it.
Yeah, that's kind of where I sit on it.
People are welcome to come into the movement. I'd like to just point this out.
How can they if you won't label them that?
People are welcome to come into the movement. They can label themselves whatever they want to.
They're going
to
call themselves libertarians.
But I'm going to say,
no,
if you're not taking,
you're not a libertarian.
If you're not taking a libertarian position, you're not a
libertarian. Right now,
you're not a libertarian.
I'm only mimicking him.
And the people, I wasn't doing that.
You're adamant.
Because it means something, and you shouldn't be able to get out there and claim to be a libertarian candidate and not be a real libertarian. It's one thing if you join the party and you just want to, like, learn more about liberty. That's cool, man.
Why does
but if
the
you
libertarian
run for,
party?
If you want to run for political office, especially that of president, then you ought to have some chops. You ought to have some idea of what the non-aggression principle is. You ought to be able to express that idea so that people can come to the conclusion that it's a good idea and embrace it for themselves. Instead of just going out there and taking some libertarian-ish positions on some issues and calling yourself a libertarian. It's one thing for a member of the party to be a libertarian, but not really. It's a whole other problem to have the candidates not be libertarians. Anyway, Ben, your thoughts?
It's just my opinion is formed basically because so many people around me are not that politically active. I'm the most politically active person. So I find more enjoyment in talking about the ideas behind libertarianism than talking about the whole theories in general.
What do you mean?
Like lowering taxes, why it helps, instead of just talking about you have to be against all forms of government force in order to be a libertarian.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you're tailoring the message. That's not to say that, you know, if somebody asked you, well, what do you think about regulation, you know, 427-blah-blah-blah, that you would not then have an opinion. You're just not going out saying repeal regulation 42-blah-blah-blah.
Yeah.
I think
that's
exactly. It's telling that the Libertarian Party has a radical caucus, like what they call the Libertarian Caucus in the Libertarian Party.
Yeah, it tells you that the Libertarian Party's been infiltrated by a bunch of conservatives who've been trying to take it over for decades.
At the same time, you use as your yardstick for what defines a libertarian a pledge that is for the party, not the dictionary definition, not the definition used widely, not the etymological definition, simply the definition that comes from the party that doesn't have that's radical
caucus. Definition.
Does it? I agree with you. I like it.
So why not use it?
Well, I think it defines the libertarian position, which is what we should aspire to teach everyone who claims to be a libertarian.
So where's the disagreement?
The disagreement is that Ian says, you can't be a libertarian unless you agree with me on everything.
I didn't say that.
That's what your position sounds like to anybody.
I'm just not going to respect that you're a libertarian if you're not actually.
Yeah, but the point that I made to you, and I think it's, you know,
if you're a half-assed
fair,
libertarian, if you're one of these people who...
What is half-assed?
Somebody who gets
define
out there
half-assed.
Claiming
sounds
to be...
like a percentage.
Somebody like Max Abramson who gets out there claiming to be a libertarian but then goes around talking about all the Republicans.
The most votes a libertarian gubernatorial candidate has gotten in the last 2 decades?
He only got that because it was 2016.
Whatever.
Anybody else, any monkey would have been able to get those votes.
The Libertarian Party of New Hampshire did not nominate a monkey.
But the monkey would have done just as well.
So let me ask this question, Mark, and I'm going to use an analogy. And yes, I understand that comparison by analogy is not whatever. But if the Green Party nominated somebody that said, you know what? Drilling for oil through polar bears is not necessarily a bad thing. Do you think the Green Party would be like, oh, well, but, you know, they want to clean up the river, so therefore good enough?
I think the Green Party, the Democratic Party, the Republican Party, the top... three of the top four parties would probably, and even the Libertarian Party, all top four parties would say, as long as they believe in our platform 80% of the time, that we're going to accept them, that there's nobody who's going to agree completely, and that would be left to the radical caucus of the Green Party to try to keep people in line. And I think there's a role for it. I think it's a good thing. I'm not arguing against it. I'm simply saying the definition of a person who's libertarian must be libertarian every issue, every time, is exclusive and nasty.
Ben, thanks for the call tonight. I appreciate it. Our toll-free number is 855-450-FREE, 855-450-3733. I don't think it's nasty to have rules for a private organization. And if that private organization... More coming up. Free Talk Live.
Bitcoin.com recently reported Bitcoin transaction fees have increased by more than 1,200% since 2015. To many Bitcoin proponents, the current fee market is moving way too fast, making Bitcoin unusable for certain transactions. The fee market and slow confirmation times have also increased the tension concerning the block size debate. However, if there are wallets with low amounts of Bitcoin that can't cover the fees, they become virtually unspendable. Learn more at news.bitcoin.com. That's news.bitcoin.com. We'll be right back.
It's Free Talk Live. Dial on in toll-free. Join us right here. Bring up anything you want. Our number is 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. We do have Skype, and the Skype username is lrn.fm. With you in the studio tonight, it's Ian.
And Mark.
And Daryl.
Also, want you to know about Dash. What is Dash? It's digital cash, a digital money platform designed to replace cash and help people manage their own wealth. And I'm telling you, I heard something today about Dash because, you know, one of the concerns about Dash is that, well, it's still not as big as Bitcoin, right? It's still got some growing to do.
Yeah.
But I can tell you this, Jay Noon was here earlier. He took the night off. He's got a lot of work that he's doing elsewhere. But he was here earlier. And we were having a conversation. He told me there's a market day that happens out in, I think it was Manchester.
Yes.
Where liberty-minded folks come together. They offer their wares and services in a room and, you know, they sell stuff to one another. He said most people were buying with Dash instead of Bitcoin. And
I believe the exact statement was most of the vendors were accepting Dash. Which is a different statement from most of the people were buying with Dash.
Okay, I guess he doesn't know what people were buying with. But if vendors are accepting it, that suggests that there's a lot of people who want to use Dash. Because there's a zillion cryptocurrencies out right there. You know, they could pick any of them. They picked Dash. Because people are getting tired, and he did suggest that people are getting tired of having to pay the Bitcoin fees. The Bitcoin fees have gotten out of control because yes, Bitcoin's full. There's this conflict going on, which hopefully will be resolved at some point. But meanwhile, people are dealing with dollar-plus fees. I mean, the average fee is like $1.50 or whatever.
What did you pay as a fee a couple days ago when you bought that $2 soda?
A lot. I paid like a $2 fee on that. It was crazy. But I'm a zealot, so that's why I was using it. That's why I'll still use Bitcoin. But if I could have used Dash, I would have used Dash if that merchant had right, accepted Dash. In that case, the merchant only took Bitcoin. But
he also took cash.
But I didn't have any cash. So anyway, my point was that's a big endorsement of Dash. If people in the Liberty community here in New Hampshire, which is one of the strongest cryptocurrency communities around the entire globe, if people in the Liberty community here just on their own volition have started taking Dash for their products and services, that to me is a major, you know, indicator that this might be the next, you know, successor, if you will, to Bitcoin. I know a lot of people are saying Ether and Ethereum, and certainly
there's a lot of great things about Ether and Ethereum.
Ethereum's amazing. There's no doubt about it. The price is very, very
but it's
strong.
It's not intended to entirely be a currency.
No, Ethereum's much more than just a currency. It's like a whole programming platform, and there's a lot more to it. Dash is focused. They are digital cash. That's the space that they have entered.
And more importantly, they are trotting out later on this year, you know, an upgrade to their technology, which is intended to be so simple that your grandmother can use it.
Really?
It's the idea. That's the selling point. My grandmother's dead.
Is this the Dash Evolution thing?
Yes. And I think that, you know, once that – it seems to me – as somebody who has spent a certain amount of time doing cryptocurrency speculation, that once that comes out, that you're, pardon me, going to see a dramatic rise in the value of Dash.
Could be a game changer. It could be. Anyway, Dash is fast, private, and easy. Fees are low, which is a big reason why a lot of people are using it instead of Bitcoin. The fees are low and the transactions are fast and can even be confirmed instantly. You can pay anyone, anywhere in the world, anytime for just pennies on the dollar. Dash is decentralized, run by users who help earn rewards for running the network and making governance decisions. Anyone can invest in Dash and earn rewards for helping run the Dash network. Join Dash and help create a better financial system for everyone. Take back control over your financial future today. You can find out more at Dash.org. There's a lot of momentum behind Dash right now. Go to Dash.org and find out why as we go to Willie, listening in California. Willie, you're on Free Talk Live.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Hey.
All right. Let's see. I was thinking about libertarianism and how close is that to rightism, right?
Rightism?
Yeah. The people on the
right. Righteism. Right.
What is that? What is that?
Right. Okay. Right. What is that? If you're righteous, you would think that you do all that is good, right?
Yes.
That's righteous. Okay. So, okay, so you got libertism and all these other things. So how close are those other libertisms close to righteism?
Well, I would think that people would define righteousness in different ways, and that everybody believes that their philosophy is in and of itself righteous.
Or they would change it.
Or they would change that philosophy. So
okay. Unless everything's, they're evil, in which case.
Everything's righteous and probably everyone's wrong.
Right. And so what is good, right? Is like we have no idea.
What do you think
that,
good
right?
is? And
okay, well, I can definitely tell you what is bad. You know, if you hurt someone in any way, that's
yep,
bad.
That's bad. Unless
if
they consent
like,
to
right?
it.
Right? Okay. Huh? Okay. So, hey, there's a basis there, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah,
all
I would
right.
say
so
good things
start.
Are those things that are
so
not
that
bad.
That would be on,
sure.
Okay, that. Right. Okay, that would be on the path of righteousism. I'm not getting on you on any of you guys' cases. Like,
did you just take a big bong
awesome.
Hit because, like, you're a little bit...
No. Actually, no. I'm not against...
It's okay. It's okay
I'm not,
you did.
Right.
Yeah,
I'm not against
you.
It at all. Like,
okay.
Right.
You just sound a little
I'm
spacey,
against,
dude. And what's the point you're trying to drive at
no,
here?
No, actually,
maybe
I have that
earlier.
Mellow... I have that mellowness about me from day one.
Okay.
Reason. So I do have that, like I took a big bomb.
So what are you trying to do here? What are you trying to say? What's this thing about righteousness
well,
that you're trying to, what's the point you're trying
right.
to make?
I mean, okay, well, the point is like you have libertarianism, you have
libertarianism,
Democrats,
yeah.
Republicans, and like what is, I mean, there's still, you know, there's so much wrong in a lot of these, you know, basically, a lot of these parties just think of themselves.
Yeah, that's pretty typical with political parties. They tend to be attract politicians, and those politicians are
right.
in love with themselves for the most part.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But you know, like, what would be the point of the Libertarian Party existing if they were going to promote communism or the Green Party
right.
or Republicans?
Well, okay.
Like, that's kind
so,
of the point
okay.
of parties existing.
All right, libertarianism would mean that, you know, there's free, a lot of freedom, I suppose.
Okay, that's
I don't
a step
know.
In the right direction. Yeah, you're kind of close there.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
I would think. Okay.
Sure.
And, all right, so so how is that different from Democrat or Republican, right?
Okay, are you really are you asking that question, or are you?
Sure. Sure.
Daryl, you're the
different?
Chairman of the Libertarian Party of New Hampshire. Would you like to field the question? This is a good question. It's a good introductory question. And by the way, the term is libertarianism, not libertarism or whatever. But just to clarify, what is the difference between the libertarians and the Democrats and the Republicans politically?
How much time do I have?
Less than a minute.
I'll give the short answer. Republicans and Democrats, basically their only main driving force is we're not the other guy, and Republicans
okay,
will support basically
exactly
anything
good.
That Democrats oppose, and Democrats will support anything that Republicans oppose, unless it's one of those
yeah.
issues where they wind up happening to agree, and that's generally on growing the size,
right.
scope, and
Isn't
power
that-
of governments.
Sorry to interrupt, but doesn't that run us all into circles, really? You know, right? I mean, it opposes the other guy. It may be, okay, if we're going to go on a righteous, I got to be a righteous party, right? I mean, like everything that is actually good for everyone, right?
But that's
regardless
the thing. Not everything
creed,
is good
religion,
for everyone.
And not everybody
right,
agrees.
But, I mean, right. Okay, buddy, whether you're gay, straight, or whatever, you have a right to live.
I think you do have a right to be left alone. Whether you're gay or whatever
right.
you are, we're going to have to say thank you, Willie, for the call tonight. It was a little disjointed and confusing. But
was
again,
that
we
Nelson?
Got...
Willie Nelson?
No, I don't think so. It didn't sound that old. More coming up here.
You think
thanks,
you're
Willie.
Always on his mind?
It's Free Talk Live, 855-450-FREE, Free Talk Live. Hey, it's Free Talk Live. Toll-free number here is 855-450-FREE, like freedom, 855-450-3733. We just had a caller asking, well, what's the difference between a Democrat, a Republican, and a Libertarian? Mark, would you mind taking a crack at that question? I think we should go around the table here.
I would prefer to answer the question, what's the difference between a liberal, a conservative, and a Libertarian? So, Republicans are supposed to be conservative.
That's a politician for you, answering the question
that
he
wasn't
wants
asked
instead of the question he was asked.
Okay, so a Republican is a member of the Republican Party.
Yeah.
A Democrat is a member of the Democratic Party.
Right.
People will call people who are not conservative or liberal in those respective parties dinos or rhinos, meaning a Democrat in name only or a Republican in name only, mm-hmm. if they do not fit the definition of conservative or liberal. A liberal,
whatever that is,
right? Well, I think you can define it. You can't always get every issue every time.
How do you define conservative or liberal?
Sure, a conservative is a person who believes that the way things have been done up to this point is generally the starting point.
So,
at least in their lifetime,
starting point. Okay,
the starting point of where we should start thinking about the issue, and.
You know, let's go back to the good old days.
The good old days. Things should be the way they were in the good old days. And the good old days were the way they were as I understood them when I was a kid.
And,
back
when yonder are those? Year. Yonder year.
Yeah. Oh, hold on. Ian.
Is that yesterday?
The
a
good
year
old
ago?
Days is a perception.
4 years ago?
It is not a reality.
Okay.
Yeah,
you know, okay.
White picket fences and Sheriff Andy Taylor.
Okay, conservatives, but what does it mean?
Conservatives believe in law and order, so they believe in government bureaucrats
are
with
saying,
guns.
Are you saying
not
liberals
government
don't
bureaucrats
believe?
Without guns?
Are you saying liberals don't believe in law and order?
No, they're not really law and order in the same sense.
Barack Obama put people in prison.
Sure, he put people in prison.
He supported the police, didn't he?
Absolutely, but a conservative would say that he was weak on crime, that he should have been tougher.
Uh-huh.
So, that's,
he let those pot smokers get away with it in Colorado and Washington.
He put Chelsea Manning in prison.
And also
Ross
Ulbricht.
And then let her out.
And Ross Ulbricht.
And
put him in prison.
Who knows what, he had probably less sway over that case, certainly less face time over that case mm-hmm. Than he did over the Chelsea
Manning
case.
He bombed a whole lot more people than George W. Bush.
True.
When you say bombed, do you mean drone bombed? Or do you mean
drone bombed.
Killed people with munitions dropped from aircraft?
I think it was drone bombed. I think he drone bombed
Yes,
more
he
people.
Drone bombed more, but did not bomb more.
Okay.
So, Barack Obama not as many foreigners died under Barack Obama's, tenure
right?
as they did under Bush's.
Okay.
Now, it's difficult to say because it depends on what
the,
you
The Pentagon
who you blame.
Severely underreports civilian deaths by margins of like tenfold.
I don't know, Mark. I was just suggesting that maybe the law and order thing applies to liberals, too.
I don't think that the liberals are generally as law and order. And what
they
I mean,
still passing laws and they still support the police. But I get where you're coming from. I mean, it's a claim.
They're not as authoritarian. How's that? I'm using the term law and order to mean authoritarian.
I think they're plenty authoritarian.
They're weak on the issue because they run from it. A Republican will say, "You're damn right. If you don't pay your taxes, I will see you put under the jail. I hope they shoot you in the head, you stinking commie." Whereas the liberal will say, "Look, the government isn't an organization of force or violence. We, of course, have to have police to maintain order, but I would prefer to see you pay your taxes voluntarily.
Let you have some of your civil liberties that the Republicans don't like.
All
so
right.
That's why the Republicans tend to see Democrats as weak on crime.
Gotcha. All right.
Okay. You want another feature of what?
I was just asking you, you were saying that. Go ahead.
Okay. Liberals tend to be more socially liberal. So they are going to allow gays to marry.
Right.
They're going to say that you should be able to smoke some pot if that's what you want to do.
But not in front of the children.
Maybe. Depends on the liberal. But yes, I mean, there's a deviance in this. And that's why I'm willing to say.
It's not really a firm definition, though,
there's
right?
not a firm
on
definition
of
libertarian
things.
Either.
Yes, there is. Yeah, and that's what we were discussing last hour.
That's what
And now it goes back full circle. And
so I'll answer the question for our caller.
Hold on. Let me finish here. There is not a firm liberal position on issues. There is not a firm conservative position on issues. One can be a one can have a. There's no one stating that there's a rule as far as conservative or liberal as far as how the issues go. Etymologically, what libertarian means is liberty, right? It's a person who believes in liberty. Liberty being defined as the non-initiation of force.
Okay, there you go. See, you just defined what a libertarian is.
I've defined what the libertarian position is.
That's right.
And
a libertarian is one who adheres to that position.
A conservative is one who is averse to change or innovation and holding to traditional values.
So that's the first thing I said. But, you know, there's lots of traditional values. So,
right, and
again,
which traditional values?
Now, let me defend my position. So etymologically, libertarian means, defaulting to liberty, right?
Okay.
However, in usage, right, because
it's been
important.
Debased it's, by people like Glenn Beck and
Ian, it
Sarah
was debased
Palin.
The
yeah.
moment it was used because the party didn't hold the line. Okay, David Nolan, when he created his chart, for deciding when you're a libertarian, and Nolan was a founding member of the Libertarian Party, mm-hmm. made a quadrant that defined you as libertarian, not a point on the chart. Okay, so what the idea of the party was is to bring people who are like-minded in so that we can teach them about the ideas of liberty.
Yeah,
not to point
yeah, sure.
fingers at them
not
and say,
let them be
you're
politicians.
Not a libertarian because you don't believe exactly what we believe.
I don't care about the party members. It's the politicians, the ones who are running for office that I'm going to point a finger at when they're okay. not libertarian. There was this guy, Derek Michael Reed, who showed up at the, it was the Libertarian Party New Hampshire Convention. Not last yes. year, but the year prior to that.
2016.
It was the first one in 2016 because there were two
correct.
Of them. So this was before the Libertarian primary had happened. Of course, Daryl, you were running as a candidate for Libertarian
yes.
nomination for president. And so was this guy, this Derek Michael Reed. And he showed up at – this was back when the Libertarian Party hadn't – Daryl, you had not taken over the reins of the chairmanship
correct.
There. Roger had not been elected as vice chair. So this was back in the day when the party was very weak. It was very – it was on its life support, basically. It was in pretty sad shape.
Held the convention around two tables in a restaurant that
yeah.
were pushed together.
Right.
So that it basically made one long table.
Yeah, and a bunch of the people who were there weren't even from New Hampshire. They were like speaking there as candidates for president or whatever. But there was maybe a dozen maximum.
There were 11 people in attendance.
Yeah.
Four of them were not LPNH members.
Right. And so this Derek Michael Reed is calling himself a libertarian. And go ahead, pull up his website if you want a good laugh.
TotalitarianDemocracy.com. It needs more animations.
But right, be careful when you pull the website up. Don't be driving at the time. You shouldn't be browsing the web if you're driving. But be careful. You might want to put on sunglasses because it's very garish, very obnoxious. Anyway, this guy, he gets up and he gives his speech, and I can't recollect exactly what the dude said, but I'm sure if you watch his videos on his website, it'll give you some idea of what his beliefs are. And he is just like, this guy's not even close to a libertarian, not even close. So I called the dude out. I took the time to ask questions, some pretty tough questions of him during the Q&A session.
The website appears to be down.
What a shame. There's going to be the Internet Archive.
Internet Archive, Wayback Machine.
I'm sure that has it, but I don't know if that means he's taken his YouTube channel down because I think he was hosting on YouTube, so maybe that's still up. But anyway, this guy wasn't even close to being a libertarian, but he sure as hell thought that he was, and he deserved to be taken down. He deserved to be laughed at, and I couldn't help but laugh. Just laugh out loud.
Are you a member of the State Libertarian Party?
Yes, I am.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
I want to thank you for using the power that you had within the party to...
I didn't have any power.
Well, you had some. You were able to call him out, right? Like, you could speak.
I just asked a question.
Being able to speak
yeah.
has
asked a
power.
Couple questions. Like why he supports taxes or something like that.
So,
I forget exactly what.
I think that absolutely this is the role of the State Libertarian Party.
I thought you were just excoriating me for for doing
Ian,
this.
That's because you don't listen. It's
I was listening.
Not your job to listen. It's your job to argue.
I was listening, Mark. You have been accusing me of going after people for not being libertarian within the party, and
no,
that's not true.
You do a radio program that is for people that aren't in the party, and when you tell those people
yeah.
that they're not libertarians because they don't believe precisely what you believe, that is exclusive and boorish, okay? And I would prefer to hear none of it. However, when you're in the context of the State Libertarian Party and you're dealing with a candidate who deviates sufficiently from the party, and I don't mind if that sufficiently is 2%. I'm fine with that. Within the party, you're vetting a candidate, absolutely, that's the place to do it, is we're going to decide whether this person's good enough. Do we want to run nobody, or do we want to run this person?
So what you're saying is, I'm not trying to be exclusive or rude to anybody. I'm just trying to say what the truth is. And the truth can be hurtful sometimes. If somebody gets on the air and says that they're a libertarian, if somebody gets on the air saying they're a libertarian but then says they support war, I'm going to tell them, sorry, that's not libertarian of you. More coming up here. Agreed. This is Free Talk Live.
A funny thing happens when you don't advertise. Nothing. Modern advertisers have been trained to look for trackability in their advertising, and web search ads are great for that. They also help you get the consumer that's looking for products like yours in the moment. But they're expensive, and they do nothing to convince people to try your product segment in the first place. They help you get a bigger piece of the pie, but branding mediums like radio grow the pie itself. Free Talk Live's on more than 150 stations, and we can help advertisers with little budgets and big ones. Send me an email, mark@freetalklive.com. It's mark@freetalklive.com.
It's Free Talk Live. You can dial in toll-free and bring up anything that you want to discuss. Our toll-free number is 855-450-FREE, like freedom. That's 855-450-3733. And we do have Skype as well. The Skype username here is lrn.fm. Joining you in the studio tonight, it's Ian.
And Mark.
And Daryl.
An amazing day, an amazing week, an amazing several months for Bitcoin, as the price right now, according to one exchange, I don't have the Bitcoin average price in front of me, but Bitstamp's exchange at $2,458 per Bitcoin. So not only has Bitcoin been just incredibly successful overall throughout its 8+ years in existence, it is also... it's been having some trouble. There's been some difficulty behind the scenes.
The average price, according to Bitcoin Average, $2,448.
Worldwide. That is the worldwide global average. Great website to check out for that. so anyway, Bitcoin, incredibly successful by all metrics. I mean, it is the world's first cryptocurrency. There have since Bitcoin become thousands of competitors. But Bitcoin has done a pretty good job of maintaining its market share until recently. It had been at like 85 to 95% for a long time. And then this year, it started just like 2 or 3 months ago, it started to drop from 85%. It's now down below 50%, meaning that Bitcoin is no longer the lion's share of all of the cryptocurrencies combined together. It's still the biggest, with about a $40 billion market cap right now, I believe. That was what it was. It was close to that. It was like $38 billion, meaning that that's the total value based in dollars of all of the Bitcoin in circulation in the world at this time. So, I mean, it's an incredible success story. There are, of course, many people who were very, very wise in the beginning, who bought Bitcoin when it was cheap, and now they are multi-billionaires.
And
or
just a couple of days ago, we celebrated Bitcoin Pizza Day.
Yeah.
And there was an article that came out saying, if you would have bought $100 worth of Bitcoin 7 years ago, that would now be worth, I think it was like $72 million U.S. dollars.
Yes. And so obviously a lot of people kick themselves and say, oh, well, I should have got in then. It's too late now. But maybe it's not too late now. Maybe we're still on the low end of
Bitcoin's
what Bitcoin's
gone up like 20% in the last 4 days.
Yeah.
I mean, if you thought that Microsoft stock was going to go up 20% in the next week, would you get in?
Well, you don't know, obviously, what's
going
to happen.
I don't know what's going in. Yeah. But
the notion
that somehow Bitcoin, these get-rich-quick Americans and their idea that, well, you know, I've got to, my money's got to go up 10,000 times in order for me to be worth me doing. No, that's not the way investment works. You got to put savings away. And I'm not saying all your savings should be in cryptocurrency by any stretch of the imagination. However, if you would have done that 5 years ago, you'd probably be pretty wealthy.
Yep.
You know, and I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow in the cryptocurrency world. I wouldn't claim that, but you need to be putting money away. You need to be putting it away in a way that is going to increase in value. Historically, it looks like cryptocurrencies have done pretty well. Some of them are certainly scams, pump and dumps, and yep. You know, Ponzi schemes, and all those things. On Free
but
Talk
Bitcoin
Live,
is not a
you
scam.
Have never heard us talk about one of those. Unless we've yet used the term scam, pump and dump, or whatever with it, because we don't endorse what we don't believe in.
Yeah, that's true. And Bitcoin is not a scam. It is not a pump and dump. It is a. It is the number one cryptocurrency still, even though it doesn't dominate completely the market like it used to. And so we were really concerned with the future of Bitcoin. We've been talking a lot about the ongoing civil war that's been happening behind the scenes, geek war, if you will, between two very distinct sides of the Bitcoin community who have been in a bitter, bitter argument with one another for years now. It's been going on. We just became aware of it really heavily within the last year or so.
Right.
But it's been going on at the programmer level and the extreme geek level
for a few years. I do remember something about 2, maybe 3 years ago to where the discussion was, at some point, we're going to need to address X.
Mm-hmm.
And, there were a few proposals back then that I don't think are any of the proposals now, but there seems to have been some kind of agreement, a truce, if you will.
Something has happened. It appears as though the big players in Bitcoin, and those are the miners. The miners are the ones who ultimately decide what goes forward as far as these different proposals. So for a while now, there have been warring sides on these two different proposals, one called Segregated Witness, the other called Bitcoin Unlimited or Emergent Consensus. And so the question is, should Bitcoin increase its block size to allow for more transactions per minute to be in the system because it's clogged right now? There's, each block, this is sort of what's going on behind the scenes in the blockchain, which is right. Essentially a distributed ledger that is the guts of the Bitcoin operation, basically. That's one of the things that makes Bitcoin special. That as these new blocks are mined, they're filled with these transactions, and there's so many transactions that want to get into these blocks that they are bidding against one another and pushing the fees up, the cost of sending a Bitcoin transaction, which used to be negligible. It used to be nothing,
pennies.
Near to nothing. You used to actually be able to send it for nothing. You used to be able to do that.
Made me angry when I couldn't.
Yeah, and then for a long time it was just a couple pennies. And now it's like $1.50 or $2 or whatever.
Which,
and it's crazy.
Can still be denominated in pennies. It's just a very large amount of pennies.
Yeah, it's insane. And it's killed off microtransactions. It's killed off small businesses. You can't have
microtransactions are incredibly important because what the notion was is that, you'd be able to load up your browser with some cryptocurrency and then sort of people's articles or music or
throw them 5 cents, 10 cents,
video or whatever it was.
Right.
In the process of liking, you would choose a denomination ahead of time. Maybe it was a dime, maybe it was a nickel, maybe you're a big spender and it was a quarter, right?
Yeah.
But you just toss this at them, and I'll grant you, like a penny isn't worth bending over and picking up. But when people throw 10,000 of them,
if you got 10,000 people throwing you a quarter,
right? Then
that's
you've
pretty
got,
good.
Then you've done something really awesome.
If you have 10 people throw you a quarter, that's 10 more quarters than you had before anybody threw you
anything.
You're
not going to make a living making videos for $2.50, though. So all I'm saying
I never said that you could make a living. I'm just saying
microtransactions were an idea that people would be able to be content creators on the internet, and people would be able to be small-time patrons of those people.
And the thing was, you can't do that with the traditional money system. So that's one of the things that made Bitcoin special.
Because credit cards, you couldn't do it.
Credit card, PayPal. If you want to do a PayPal transaction, they're going to knock 30 cents off for themselves. And 2.9%.
Correct.
So, you can't send less than 50 cents with PayPal, basically, or the person gets almost none of it. Even out of a dollar, they're getting, you know, only two-thirds of it or whatever, less than two-thirds of it. So you can't send a quarter on PayPal. You just can't do it.
Right.
But with Bitcoin, you used to be able to. No more. So that's one of the problems. The classic example of something that's a little more realistic for somebody, like a real-life application, there was someone who modified a vending machine, somebody who I think Ernie Hancock knows from Freedom's Phoenix. They brought a vending machine to one of the Freedom Festivals here in New Hampshire a few years ago, and you could go to this vending machine and order yourself a pack of smokes, or you could
a whole variety of things.
Well, whatever was in there. They had bullets, they had silver
sewing kits, they had off spray,
but like a pack of Cheetos, your typical vending machine, which you used to be able to do with Bitcoin, that can't be done anymore. Nobody's going to go and pay $1.50 on top of a
75 cent pack of chips.
So Bitcoin's broken basically behind the scenes. It's still working, day to day, but you have to pay through the nose to get your transaction through. And so finally, apparently at this consensus event that happened over the last few days.
It was Monday.
Monday. So was it just a one day? I felt like it was more than one day. But
The news story is about something that happened on Monday.
Yeah, because Eric Voorhees from Shapeshift.io presented something on Saturday. So I think it was like a full weekend event. There's a big deal that's coming out of this consensus. We'll tell you about it coming up here on Free Talk Live. Free Talk Live. You dial in toll free, you bring up whatever you want. Here, our number is 855-450-FREE, like freedom, 855-450-3733. Coming up, the big news out of consensus, and I'd got my dates all screwed up. Apparently, the big shapeshift.io announcement was Monday, not Saturday. And that's when consensus started, was Monday, and it's ending today.
And the big announcement was big.
With Shapeshift.io, you mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Their new product, Prism.
Prism.
Yeah. Allows you to...
I wish they would have chosen a different name, because every time I hear Prism, I think of that NSA spying technology.
I think that the idea was that while it's one thing, it can be many things at the same time. Mm. And I think the Prism, well, it's well made.
It's a portfolio thing, right, where you hold different... crypto.
If I could explain it's on the Ethereum platform. So you enter Ethereum into it, mm-hmm. and then you enter percentages you'd like of whatever crypto alternative currencies, altcoins, mm-hmm. That you'd like to hold. So you can have your Ethereum in there, and say you want Bitcoin, say you want Monero, say you want Dash, Ethereum
Zcash.
Classic. I'm not sure Ethereum Classic would be on there. Zcash might be a good one.
It's a closed beta right now, I think, right? It's not open to everybody.
I can't answer
correct.
That.
I think it is.
I'm not participating. Yeah. I think it's a great idea. And then it splits it up and it keeps it at those percentages. So if, let's say, Monero runs up then it's going to sell Monero in order to keep you at 20% or whatever you put it at. And then Monero crashes back down because the developer says something dumb on Twitter, right? And then Dash runs up and then keeps running or whatever. Then it keeps selling or whatever it goes.
So. Huh. Yeah, I mean, I saw the intro video to it where he made the pitch at Consensus, and it looked interesting. And I guess one of the pitches, or the part of the important idea was that you would be able to hold these cryptocurrencies through this Prism concept without actually storing them in an exchange,
right? And without needing to maintain multiple wallets,
right? And it's always under your private key.
And it's all backed up by what are called smart contracts on the Ethereum platform, which, as long as the contract's written well, then it could work. The contract, if it's not written well, as we saw with the decentralized autonomous organization last year, could result in somebody stealing a lot of Bitcoin. But I suspect that Eric Voorhees and Shapeshift have done their homework and vetted their code pretty well. But the idea would be that if you can store these cryptocurrencies without having to trust them to an exchange, and without having to take care of all of these different keys that you might have to have if you wanted to have a bunch of different wallets, then that allows people to simply get into investing in cryptocurrency and simply exit investing in cryptocurrency or, you know, selling it,
right,
without having to put it in someone else's hands, which is interesting. It's kind of a new concept.
Yes.
In this particular
so
field.
So that happened on Monday.
That
and
happened.
Then
yeah.
There was the ceasefire, if you will, in the nerd wars over
okay.
what direction Bitcoin is going to go. Cointelegraph has the story where...
Hold on. I'm sorry. Hold yep. that thought. Wolfgang is here in Nevada with comments. You want to bring up whatever's on your mind? Go ahead, Wolfgang.
Hello. Last week was the 10-year anniversary of the exchange between Ron Paul and Giuliani.
Really?
TV debates.
Oh, is this where...
He was on,
what did Giuliani say? What was the famous...
Well, Ron Paul was on Scott Horton's show last week to kind of commemorate it because it was such an important thing. It changed so many people's minds, and a lot of people took notice of that.
Was that where Giuliani said, like, obedience is strength or something like that? Some sort of crazy doublespeak?
No, this was about 9/11. Why do they kill innocent people? Mm-hmm. And Ron Paul said it's because we kill their innocent people. Only
right.
worse on a grand scale for decades, you know? No, and Ron, and Giuliani's reaction was really good. And he was telling the truth. He said, I've never heard such a thing. He said, take that back. Take that right. back. I've never heard such a thing.
The whole idea. It's so dehumanizing to people in the Middle East to think that, oh my God, they wouldn't react to having their mothers, daughters, children, sisters, brothers killed by American drones
right.
or service people or whatever, or to have dictators propped up in their country, because there's these sheiks and fiefdoms in many cases are supported by the United States. They don't have a say over their government. Why? Because not because the Saudis are strong, but because the Saudis get support from the United States government.
But I think he was really telling the truth. He really hadn't ever considered the idea, and I think, like, even today, when these things happen, you never hear this. You know, it was on national TV in those debates, and it was such a shock to the whole system for such an idea to even be expressed. And I think it's remarkable. I don't really believe in divine intervention, but I think for that idea to get on national TV and so many people to take notice, it's like a miracle. How many people even have that can... Once they hear that thought, can even digest it. It just bounces off them, you know?
Yeah, that's true. But that's why, we got to hit them over and over again with these ideas. And Ron Paul was a wonderful, and still is, a wonderful communicator of the ideas of liberty. And thank goodness that we had him, where he was and was able to deliver messages like, end the war on drugs and, all the really principled things that he said during his presidential campaigns, whether as a libertarian in 1988 or as a Republican in 2008 and 2012. The guy did a lot of good work at bringing new people into the ideas of liberty. So, Wolfgang, anything else you want to share tonight about that?
Well, it's just that it's remarkable how there are so few people who will say that now, libertarians or Rand Paul. You know, Ron Paul was always putting, he was saying that we need to put ourselves in the shoes of the people of these other people. Like in South Carolina debate, he talked about the golden rule of foreign policy, and they booed him, all those Christians, you know.
It's like
those ideas, if libertarians would lead with that and not hide it like they all do, but I think it's because they don't quite believe it themselves. That,
and this comes right back around to the problem we were discussing in the second hour of these libertarian candidates not actually being particularly libertarian. If we had a bunch of Ron Pauls out there, I wouldn't have anything to complain about. Hey, thank you, Wolfgang. I appreciate hearing from you tonight. So the quote I was thinking of with Giuliani, I did go and look it up. It's out of a 1994, I thought it was newer than that, but 1994 article from the New York Times where he was speaking at some forum about crime. And the then mayor said, quote, "We look upon authority too often and focus over and over again for 30 or 40 or 50 years as if there's something wrong with authority." We see only the oppressive side of authority, said Giuliani. He said, maybe it comes out of our history and our background. What we don't see is that freedom is not a concept in which people can do anything they want and be anything they can be. Freedom is about authority. Freedom is about the willingness of every single human being to cede to lawful authority a great deal of discretion about what you do.
It sounds like a speech given by Big Brother in 1984.
Yeah.
It really sounds like that.
Yeah.
Obedience is peace.
Total doublespeak.
Yeah, whatever
right?
it is. I mean, it's what it sounds like.
Freedom is about authority. How crazy is that statement? It's Free Talk Live. There are lots of ways to listen to Free Talk Live. Our podcast has been around since podcasts began, and now the FTL feed is loaded with content besides our full show archives. Did you know that we make it easy for you to customize your podcast subscriptions? We have different feeds, one that includes only our full shows, one with just the Daily Digest, and one with just the Edgington Post. You decide what you listen to. It's quick and easy to customize your feeds at feeds.freetalklive.com. That's feeds.freetalklive.com. It's Free Talk Live. You can dial on in toll-free, bring up anything you want. Our number here is 855-450-FREE, like freedom, 855-450-3733. We've got Skype. So Skype on in here at username lrn.fm. We were talking about Bitcoin. We can tell you more about that, but if you want to get the latest on Bitcoin, head over to bitcoin.com. They've been reporting on this Bitcoin geek war for a while over there, how the transaction fees have dramatically increased since 2015, more than 1,200% since then. And this copy was written, what, a few months ago? I don't know what that yes. number is right now.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's 2,000, 2,500. It's been crazy. To the Bitcoin proponents out there, the current fee market is moving way too fast. The fee market and slow confirmation times have increased the tension concerning the block size debate. And is that debate over? Well, we're going to tell you a little bit more about that coming up here. If there are wallets, though, right now with low amounts of Bitcoin that can't cover the fees, that Bitcoin's unspendable. And there are millions of dollars worth of Bitcoin that are in those very tiny little wallets that are unspendable at this point around the globe. You can learn more at news.bitcoin.com. You can do a lot more besides just get the news at bitcoin.com. You can learn about Bitcoin. You can play games with Bitcoin. You can discuss Bitcoin on their forum. It's uncensored. Go to news.bitcoin.com. Get started over there. As we go back to the story, or just now getting into the story about Bitcoin and this debate, this geek war that's been going on, you had a story that you wanted to share with us from Cointelegraph, Daryl.
Yes, Cointelegraph on Monday reported that a number of leading players in the blockchain industry reached a consensus regarding the Bitcoin scaling solution. This break in the scaling debate stalemate is a new, highly significant boost for the Bitcoin ecosystem. They then mentioned several of the players involved.
I believe Roger Ver was involved.
Roger Ver is involved, as would be the owners of Digital Currency Group, Bitfury, Bitmain, and several others. They agreed to
Bitcoin.com.
Yep.
Already mentioned.
Okay.
Roger Ver of Bitcoin.com, along with several other
people. Well, I thought you were saying
people.
He was in charge of Bitfury. And
No.
It didn't sound
I said as well as the owners of.
All right.
They have agreed to collectively enable the SegWit proposal for Bitcoin scaling.
Which is what people had said Roger would never do. The people who, you know, were on the other side. So
I don't know where they
sides.
Get that from. He came on the air with us and said he would. He said that it was implementable.
Right. He didn't say he would do it. He just said they could do it, but that it wasn't important enough to do right now. So clearly Roger has been persuaded to come to the table and negotiate on this.
I mean, Roger's a businessman. Businessmen negotiate.
Good.
What I've seen, is the negotiations don't go on the other side. It's like, okay. This is the right way to do it. You do it the right way. We're going to scream louder on Facebook.
Yeah.
You know, it's pathetic.
So the article says that the SegWit will be implemented, quote, effective immediately.
Really?
Additionally.
I thought they had to get to like 80, percent or something.
That's
like that.
From and we had pulled up the Bitcoin scaling agreement that says they will activate SegWit at an 80% threshold,
right.
Signaling at bit 4, and I don't know what that means.
But if you were to go to CoinDance, so there's a website called coin.dance/blocks that shows you what the miners are supporting as far as segregated witness or emergent consensus, and right now there hasn't really been an increase on either one of them since this decision was made. So we don't know how long it's going to take to put this into play.
Right.
They are saying that they would need to activate the 2 megabyte hard fork within 6 months. And you're saying
that's the next part that I was going to get to.
But you're saying segregated witness is going to be activated immediately?
That's what Cointelegraph reports.
Because so previously the claim was that segregated witness would happen at 95%. Now they're saying it's going to be an 80% thing.
That's what the agreement says.
Right.
And Cointelegraph is reporting it as effective immediately. So maybe effective immediately they're working towards the 80%?
Well, and according to...
Because you have to remember, journalists a lot of times will summarize things and sometimes not
get
you know,
it right
very accurately.
But the statement from medium.com comes directly from the people who signed this consensus.
The Bitcoin scaling agreement
with the Digital Currency Group. They are 56 companies located in 21 countries. They represent 83.28% of hashing power. So they have a supermajority of the mining power within this group of people who made this agreement.
Yes.
These are now the most important players in Bitcoin if they move forward with this particular plan. And if they have 83% of the mining power and they're saying that segregated witness has an 80% threshold, that would seem to mean that they've got enough people. They just have to flip on the switch. They have to indicate that they want to do this now.
Correct.
And so that's one of the reasons I hope that at some point we can get Roger to come on here. I know he's probably busy traveling. The conference just ended today.
I sent him a telegram yesterday.
I sent him one earlier today.
He hasn't seen it yet, to me that he's busy.
I'm sure we'll be able to get him on to explain better what some of the technical aspects of this mean, because we're not, none of us here are Bitcoin miners. We're not technically engineers of Bitcoin. But this is sounding pretty good, Daryl.
Right. So in addition to implementing SegWit, they will work towards what they're claiming here on Cointelegraph would be, quote, another hard fork, which will enable the increase of the block size to 2 megabytes. Current limit of 1. Cointelegraph does not say that.
That's
what the agreement that they do link over to.
Yeah.
And I'm very glad that they link over to that, because it does allow you to, get that little bit of extra information.
The question is this too little too late? If this takes 6 months, now it says within 6 months, so it could be next month. So, I mean, we don't know how long that's going to be. But if it takes 6 months to increase the block size from 1 megabyte to 2 megabytes, it's effectively doubling the capacity of Bitcoin.
The SegWit is supposed to also double or triple.
Right.
And so then you're going to double that. So that would be
quadruple. How long is the SegWit going to take to implement? How long is the 6 month, how much of these six months
are
we going to have to wait?
These are questions I don't know.
And so that's why I'm saying, is this too little too late? I mean, I'm glad they're doing this. But Mark, you said there was some sort of agreement like this in the past or some
Hong
kind of
Kong,
thing,
as I understand it.
That fell apart.
Yeah.
So, this is not necessarily, this is good news, but it isn't done yet, right?
I think that it's the path is now laid out, the path has been cleared for a solution, and that we should be cautiously optimistic.
Okay.
We should hope for the best and watch
plan
out
for the worst.
For the worst, yeah. Because if you're reading the same thing I read, Daryl, no, you're not. Dash Force News put out an article today.
I've got that.
And in that article, it says, basically that Blockstream and the developers,
Blockstream is a corporation that has paid off some of these developers, apparently.
That employs some of these developers, and that Blockstream creates sort of off-chain solutions. I'm not a big fan of off-chain solutions. And that strangely Blockstream, who's been sort of the other side of this argument, they don't want anything to do with it. So,
well, they're outnumbered at this point.
Well, yes, but you see, a compromise is characterized by everybody not getting everything they want. Okay.
Well, it doesn't sound like
everybody
even
gets
at the
something
table.
They want, and you do not get all of what you want. If you want all of
this
what
is
you
a
want,
hard fork.
You will find. Yeah, well, like they'll get all of the, what they don't want a hard fork.
Well, they're going to get one.
Oh, too bad.
If these people
they
go
don't want
it
though.
But that doesn't matter what they don't want.
I understand reality
miners,
and what you want often is separated, and this is what I'm trying to explain to people is that this is how compromises work. Okay? Like, you know, Bitcoin's a big community with a lot of people, a lot of different opinions, and they're not all S-coin hawking jerks.
Let them hold on to their precious Bitcoin core without compromise, and then they're going to get crushed if 80% of the miners go over to whatever this emergent consensus is.
So you did mention the agreement from Hong Kong. Apparently, it did not include any of the people involved in this current agreement.
We're coming up here, 855, 450 free. It's Free Talk Live. This is Free Talk Live. 855-450-FREE is our toll-free number. 855-450-3733. In the middle of that break there, Bitcoin hit a new record high of $2,500 per Bitcoin. According to BitcoinAverage.com, it's dipped down now to $2,496.
That's it. Sell them all. You can just send them all to Free Talk Live.
We'll take them. I mean, you can go to Bitcoin.
The tip jar.
Right. We haven't promoted the tip jar in a long time. I'm glad you mentioned that. If you would like to, you may send Bitcoin or altcoins to Free Talk Live over at bitcoin.freetalklive.com, and we will put them to good use. So anyway, we're talking about this, what sounds like really good news. And I don't know, did you mention on the air or off the air, Daryl, because we were talking during the break as well, that this previous consensus, this previous plan that I had mentioned, I think you mentioned it off the air. So
I think I mentioned it as the music was hitting at the end of that last segment. There was the mention of in 2016 in Hong Kong, there was some kind of agreement, and Cointelegraph does report on this. It says that in February 2016 in Hong Kong, there was discussion of reaching an agreement. However, it had different terms, and the discussion did not include the people who have agreed to the current consensus.
So this is a whole different crew of people.
Correct.
Apparently a much larger crew, because there's 80% here.
Well, it's about damn time people figured out something, you know, some sort of path forward, because it seemed to have been at a stalemate. Bitcoin had these two sides that's been fighting for years about the direction things should go. And now, finally, now that fees are hitting a dollar, I don't know what the current average is. Last time I looked, it was like $1.64 or something crazy like that. Now that the fees are getting so insane, people are finally starting to drop off of Bitcoin. They're using alternatives like Dash and Ethereum. And finally, these miners and these business people are getting it through their heads that they better fix Bitcoin, or it's gonna lose its market position more so than it already has right now.
I think that warning has been pretty thoroughly put out there at this point. So I'm excited to see that these people are doing this.
Yeah.
Now I will say that I've seen people doubting that this is the case, and there's been some excellent points raised. Segregated Witness, this program that's this patch for Bitcoin, is a program that is set up for something different than what they're saying. You're not going to bring Segregated Witness onto a platform that has a 2 megabyte blockchain, because Segregated Witness is created for a platform that has a 1 megabyte blockchain. Now, does that mean that it couldn't be altered?
Of course, it can be done. I think you're getting into too much of a technical detail. These people are the techs. They know what the difference between Segregated Witness and all the other stuff is, and most of our listeners don't. And I don't even really know what Segregated Witness is. All I know is I've heard that it's good for making more transactions fit or whatever. So, good. I say bring it on. Make it happen, and make it happen as soon as possible, because my big concern here is that this may be too little too late. Is it too late to save Bitcoin?
I don't think so.
I hope not.
I would say that, if this were happening to Dogecoin, that nobody's really done anything with in several years outside of a couple of
jokes. They had a race car once.
Yeah, that was several years ago when it was funded largely as a joke.
By the
way, hey, can we wind up getting Dogecoin to sponsor a race car?
Right now, the median fee, meaning half the fees are higher, half the fees are lower, is approximately $2 on Bitcoin.
Wow.
The average fee, according to CoinCap.io, the median fee I got from BitcoinFees.21.co, CoinCap.io has at the top of their site the average fee for Bitcoin, $3.25. So something's got to change, and it's got to change
I think
right
as long
now.
As there's light at the end of the tunnel, that you're fine. Because at this point...
sometimes that light's a train, and Ian's asking, is that a train?
I understand.
So
you
if
know,
they can get this together...
Oftentimes it's not.
If they can get this together and get it off the ground sooner rather than later, that's good. And certainly the market is likely going to respond positively to this news. I mean, this news is probably going to push the price up throughout the night tonight. I mean, it seems to be hitting pretty big.
$1 million.
What happened was, for those just tuning in...
That is not a prediction.
A group of 56 companies, this from DashForceNews.com and Joel Valenzuela, who is an occasional co-host here, guest co-host on Free Talk Live, more than 83% of the mining network's hashing power signed this compromise agreement. They're going to activate SegWit, segregated witness. They'll be increasing the block capacity within 6 months to 2 megabytes. This is great news. The move is meant to appease both SegWit supporters and big blockers, wishing it to increase on-chain capacity with a simple block size increase. That scaling was agreement was brokered by Barry Silbert, the CEO of the Digital Currency Group. This compromise, however, does not sit well with all members of the greater Bitcoin community. Members of Bitcoin Core and Blockstream, which is that corporation that has been very influential with the Bitcoin Core programmers, as well as their supporters, are not satisfied, and they insist on a pure segregated witness implementation without the 2 megabyte hard fork. As Blockstream.
Can you imagine why? I cannot imagine why somebody would demand that.
Well, because they're going to lose some control. If this hard fork happens, they are out.
It has to do with control.
They are out. Because if this block... Because what we read before, and I don't think we read it on the air, but I did talk briefly about it, was that if 80%+ of the miners go into this hard fork scenario, which they're talking about doing now...
Right.
If they go through with this hard fork and all the mining power goes over to this new blockchain, this new Bitcoin, if you will, there would then be 2 Bitcoins. And the idea would be that because all the mining power would be over on this other Bitcoin, the weaker Bitcoin, if you will, with the 20% of the mining power.
There'd be old coin and new coin.
Right. They would still both be Bitcoin, but they would then be 2 different blockchains. And this old coin would still have the insanely high fees and with no mining support behind it.
It wouldn't
either.
Have the high fees because there would be less, probably, there would be, at over time, in relatively short order, there would be fewer transactions going on.
Okay, but there was some sort of thing about how it's a weaker network because the miners are gone,
There would be a lot. It would be a lot weaker network than it previously
and
was.
And there was some sort of way that they could basically crush it, essentially strangle it in its.
It's possible.
Bed.
I'm not. I just don't know.
Like put a pillow over.
I'm not
its
a believer
and...
in that. At 80%, maybe
that's what they were saying. You'd have to have at least 80% of the mining power that they could basically crush it out of existence because no one would want to actually use that particular chain.
So you have to look at the market failure aspect of this. Even these people that are signing this that have the 83% of the hashing power that we referred to in the article, just because they support it and just because they're going to signal for it doesn't mean that they're going to turn all their computers to signal
for
it.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
So what they're going to do is they're going to hedge their bets a little bit and they're going to leave some amount of computers on the other direction. Let's say it's 80-20 or whatever.
Yeah.
Then the miners on the other side are going to do the same thing. Because they're not gonna, you know, they're not gonna say, "Oh, we stand firm." You know, that doesn't happen. And they're gonna do, you know, some percentage or whatever. So you're gonna see old coin and new coin have, you know, these networks, and they're gonna be whatever size they are. And well, it's gonna be interesting to see.
So apparently, this Luke Dash Jr., who's one of the core programmers, is saying that they are going to force SegWit implementation somehow by some sort of BIP 148, Bitcoin Improvement Protocol, is I believe what that stands
right,
for.
Right, so what they're saying is they're going to, in some way, go around the miners. Now, I've never heard that this is possible.
I've heard there's something called a user-activated soft fork.
Yes,
that's what they're talking about.
All I know,
yeah.
I don't know what it is.
It
I
says
don't
here,
know how it happened.
It says here, nodes running this user-activated soft fork would essentially reject blocks from miners not signaling for SegWit starting August 1st, potentially splitting the chain. So there is likely going to be a hard fork, a split of the blockchain, having two bitcoins, and then we're finally going to get to see what the market prefers. Because there's been all this talk about, you know, the Bitcoin Core supporters are like, well, everyone supports SegWit. They support our side. Only these miners, these greedy miners, are against it. And then, you know, the other side's like, well, yeah, but the miners are what's important, and the average user doesn't even know what they're doing. So, of course, they support, you know, the standard thing because they don't know there's even another option out here. I mean, there's... It's going to be interesting to see where things actually shake out if this split happens.
If you really want to know who has the longer sword, you got to have a fight.
And then there's the users like me where I'm not running a node. I'm not mining anything. I've got a wallet on my phone.
Right.
Will I still be able to use my Bitcoin at the places I'm using my Bitcoin?
Yes. But
in
which
theory,
Bitcoin?
In
but which
theory,
Bitcoin will it be is the question.
What happens if... The wallet that I'm using goes one way, and
that's a big question.
Do you have the Jax wallet, the official wallet of Free Talk Live?
No comment.
They have already released their memo on this one, and they say that they're going to support both coins.
Both of them,
and
yeah, just
you'll
like
be fine.
Ether.
If you you can keep some other off-brand weird wallet, and that's fine by you. And I don't know what's going to happen to your
every
coins.
Wallet manufacturer is going to need to make a decision about this and put out a notice to all of their users explaining what's happening. It's going to be confusing. People are going to do things like Mark did with his Ether Classic and send it to an Ether address and lose it forever. So it's going to be a cluster F. The price may drop as a result of this on both, but as we saw with Ether and Ether Classic, over time, the price of those has come up, both of them. So I say hold on to both of them and see what happens. I'm not going to sell one way or the other. More coming up here tomorrow. We'll see you then. FreeTalkLive.com.
This is Riley Blake, producer of the Free Talk Live Daily Digest. In addition to the Digest, I host my own weekly podcast called Anarcho Agenda, providing you liberty-oriented content without all the statism. Subscribe to Anarcho Agenda on iTunes, Google Play, or visit anarchoagenda.libsyn.com. That's anarchoagenda.libsyn.com for further details.